on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I don't remember that we've ever had four guests on one show before, but we do today. Unbelievable. First up, we have Noah St. John, one of the top speakers, writers, thought leaders out there right now. 25 books, an amazing career. We will speak to him. He's been with us before. We love him. After that, we're going to speak with Marinella Profi from SAS about AI. We're going to learn from Dr. Andrew Freeman about inflammation. I'm really getting this joint pain, so I'm excited to speak with him. And then we have someone playing the Quick 10, actress from New York City, Anna Fishbein. She is a character and a half. And so it is a great show. Adding all of that up, a little bit of information for your health, a little bit of fun, a little bit of learning how to become a great thought leader, and AI info all in one show. What else can we do for you? Be right back. We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us today. Very excited to welcome back to the show Noah St. John. He has been with us three or four times before, one of our most frequently invited back guests. He is known as the father of affirmations and the 12-week breakthrough, and he is doing something new now called Done With Head Trash. He's written 25 books and has worked with nine-figure company CEOs, professional athletes, celebrities, all of that. Noah, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. Great to be back with you.
Thank you for coming back. So, head trash. Mm-hmm. I think I got a lot of that.
Why do you think I wrote 25 books, Jim? Because I wanted to get rid of my own. All right. So, of course, the question everyone's asking is, well, hey, Noah, what is head trash? So for everyone listening to the program, I want you to think about your goals, right? Everybody talks about goals, right? We've heard that a million times. You got to say goals, right? And think positive and work hard and muscle and grind, right? We've heard that a million times. And that's all fine and well and good. Not really. But anyway, there's nothing wrong with goal setting. In fact, we humans are goal-oriented organisms. We're always setting goals. We're always thinking about, obsessing about what do we want, right? Whether it's a new house, a new car, or a ham sandwich for lunch. We're always thinking about what we want. But here's the problem that they don't really talk about, right? They never really told us, is what happens after you set the goal. Right. So here's what happens. So let's say, you know, you have a goal about money, right? So, hey, I want to make an extra $10,000 a month or an extra $100,000 or extra million a month, whatever it might be, whatever your goal is, right? But here's what happens for most people, and I've been coaching people for over 30 years now, help my clients make over $3 billion. What I've noticed is that most people, after they set a goal, they instantly go, yeah, I don't think I can do it. Now that thought right there, I don't think I can do it, might be a conscious thought. It might be a subconscious thought, right? You might not even be aware that you're thinking that. But nevertheless, what you're going to do is you're going to say, well, you know, hey, no, I want to make more money, but I'm too busy. You know, I really don't have the time, or, you know, I can't afford it. You know, oh, it takes money to make money. So I don't have the money. Or, you know, oh, my spouse won't let me do it. You know, I'm just too busy. I got too long of a to-do list. So you see what happens? We set the goal, which is great, but then we instantly talk ourselves out of it. That's what most people are doing. And that is one of the symptoms of what I call head trash.
Okay, why are we so stupid to set the goal in the first place?
If we're immediately this is why I love coming on this show, Jim. You ask the best questions. I love that. Okay, so like I just said, that thought of I can't do it because, and then you just fill in the blank. Now that could be a conscious thought, but it also could be a subconscious thought. All right. I'll give you a perfect example. I was speaking at a seminar in Los Angeles for 1,000 business owners, you know, entrepreneurs, 7, 8, 9-figure earners. And a man came up to me out of the audience. He said, hey, Noah, I want you to coach me. You are the coach I've been looking for. And I didn't know the guy from Adam. His name was Adam, ironically. But anyway, he said, you know, I own this company and we got to seven figures really fast, but I haven't been able to grow. And I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on every marketing guru out there, and we just can't grow. And he said, as soon as I heard you speak about head trash and power habits, everything you just said, he said, I knew you were the coach I've been looking for. So he hired me on the spot, and I coached him for 18 months. Well, I was able to get his company that had been stalled for the previous 4 years to over 20 million in sales in less than 18 months. So how did I do that? Well, I did it by exactly what I'm talking about. Number one, identifying what his head trash was. So he had been throwing all of this money at the outside of the problem, but no one had shown him about what I call the inner game, right? The inner game is everything that happens between your ears that you can't see directly, but it's affecting everything that you do. And so he was able to get to seven figures, which is, hey, that's an amazing accomplishment, right? But no one had, because no one had shown him how to fix his inner game and get rid of his head trash, he couldn't grow anywhere past that, no matter how much he tried on the outer. So that's an example of how this head trash, and as I call it, the inner game, is really affecting you, and mostly without your knowledge.
And is it just as simple as I can't succeed? Is it other stuff?
Well, no, not really. No, there's a lot of reasons. So I developed this program. I created a framework, a formula called the Power Habit System. Because what I realized, see, I grew up poor in a rich neighborhood and I hated being poor. And so I went to the library when I was a kid and I read every success book, every self-help book, all the classics, Dale Carnegie, Napoleon Hill, Stephen Covey. And they all basically said the same thing, you know, like I was talking about, set your goals and think positive. So they all say the same thing, but I really worked hard and I didn't get ahead. I wasn't successful. And I'm like, what in the heck is going on around here? You know, I'm doing everything the books say. Why am I not successful? And that's when I realized there's something else going on that they're not telling us. And so I had to develop this system that I now call the Power Habit System, which the full name is the Power Habits of Unconsciously Successful People. And what I mean by that is what I discovered after all these years of research and study and coaching is that highly successful people are doing things unconsciously that they don't even know they're doing, number one. And therefore, number two, they can never tell us. They can't teach you because they're unconscious. And so, you know, going back to like Adam and, you know, my other clients, but in, you know, in his case in particular, you know, he had gotten to a certain point of success, but then because his subconscious mind was holding him back, again, calling it the head trash, he couldn't go anywhere past that. And so, you know, my power habit system is a series, a sequence, a framework that highly successful people are doing unconsciously. So that is, you know, what I'm now able to teach people. And that's one of the main reasons that I've been able to help my clients, you know, add over $3 billion, because we get to the subconscious. And then once you're fixing the subconscious, well, then the conscious really takes care of itself.
And has anyone figured out what those unconscious people are doing that are so correct?
Well, me. Yeah, that's why I've written the 25 books. Yeah, that's what going back to your point a moment ago is, see, so the new program that I have created is called Done With Head Trash. And the Done With Head Trash is really, it's three parts. The first part is to, number one, understand what your head trash really is saying to you. Now, for each person, it's a little bit different. You know, so like, for example, one person might say, well, I can't be more successful than my father because my father was very successful and I don't want to upstage him. Now, that's not a conscious thought, right? Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, hey, you know what? This looks like a great day. I think I'll hold myself back from success today. You know, no one would ever say that. That's a conscious thought. But meanwhile, all of these things are going on in the subconscious. So it's like the iceberg principle. Right. The human mind, our conscious thoughts are only about 5% of our thoughts, behaviors and actions. Right. That's about 5%, like the visible part of the iceberg that's above the surface. Well, the vast 95% is the subconscious. That means the things you don't even know you're doing. And as I always tell my clients and in my keynote speeches, I will always tell people it's not the part of the iceberg that they could see that sunk the Titanic. It's the part they didn't see that sunk the Titanic, and that's the part that's sinking most of us as well. It's the subconscious, the part you don't see.
All right, so can you go through the power habit system then? Are there steps to it?
Yeah, there are 11 total power habits. So that's what I go over in Done With Head Trash. So for the folks listening, you can just go to donewithheadtrash.com. And it's right there. It's right there in the program, donewithheadtrash.com. So, you know, we first start by identifying what is your specific head trash. Like, what is it? In other words, as I just stated, people aren't going around saying, I think I'll hold myself back from success today. But meanwhile, most people are holding themselves back from success. And it's enough to drive you crazy. It's like, how come I keep getting so close to success, and then right at the last minute, I sabotage it? See, that was me. I was doing that for years, and it would drive me nuts. I was like, why do I keep snatching defeat from the jaws of victory? And it didn't make any sense until I was able to get into my own subconscious. And then I realized, oh, that's what's going on here. I didn't even know that, right? I didn't know that was going on. And so that's the first part, is to identify what it is. Then, you know, we use the power habits. We use the system. So there's 11 total power habits that highly successful people are doing unconsciously. You know, so one of them is, for example, to what I call find your because, right? You have to find your because. And what I mean by that is that many, many people are going after something that they don't even want anymore. Like, you know, for the classic example would be the person who became a dentist because his father was a dentist and his father was a dentist and his father was a dentist. But, you know, this person really wanted to be a marine biologist. You know, that's just a classic example. You know, so you're going after something you don't really want, or something that you think somebody told you had to do. And that's a great reason to sabotage, because like, I don't even want to be doing this anyway. Or anymore, you know. So that's just one simple example, but you have to understand exactly why you're doing these things. And, you know, for me, it was that. It was like, I didn't want to be more successful than my father because I said, oh, he's not going to like me if I'm more successful than him. Well, it turns out I was totally wrong about that. But see, I didn't even know I was doing that on a conscious level. So these are some examples of how we can hold ourselves back without even realizing it.
All right. So one of the power habits is having a goal-free zone. How do we deal with goals then?
Okay. So as I stated earlier, we humans
pretty well so far. So how do we deal with
it? Right. Well, we humans are goal-oriented organisms. So we're never going to not set goals. I'm not saying don't set goals because that's idiotic. We have to set goals. I mean, goals are great. The problem is that so many people are stressed out by their goals, right? So like, many people were raised that if you're not always working all the time, then you have no value. So they don't understand or appreciate their own value or worth apart from goal setting. All right. So, there's just tons of examples of that. Specifically, like, this shows up with athletes, right? Athletes, you know, that I've coached, many of them, you know, we're just told from age two that, you know, if you're not successful in athletics, then you're not worth anything. Now, of course, they weren't told it like that. I mean, the parent didn't sit down and say it like that, but they got the message. You see what I mean? Kids are smart. And so they're like, geez, if I'm not winning medals, if I'm not winning awards, then I guess I'm not worth anything. And of course, that's not true, but that's what a lot of people believe. So they get totally stressed out about their goals. So what I realized, in order to combat that, we need to do what I call goal-free zones. That means you have to take specific conscious time in your day and in your life where you're not setting goals. And you have to realize that, wait a minute, my worth is not dependent on how many goals I reach or don't reach. My worth is just because I exist. I am enough. And that is very hard for a lot of people to get. But once you get that understanding, then ironically, achieving your goals becomes much easier.
And is that done with the goal replacement surgery? That sounds painful.
Yes. Goal replacement surgery is another power habit. And what that comes down to is, as I was saying a moment ago, that many people are going after goals they don't want anymore, or goals that were given by someone else, you know, that were foisted upon them, and they internalized it and said, oh, I got to go after this. And meanwhile, I don't even want it anymore. You know, I mean, a classic, you know, again, it shows up a lot in athletics, but also it shows up in business because, you know, like the dentist example I gave earlier, and it's like, well, wait a minute, I want to be a marine biologist, right? So that now to stand up for yourself is very hard sometimes, right? It's like, well, wait a minute, but you're supposed to be a dentist. Well, but that's not what I want. You know, so that can be really hard for a lot of people, you know, so to understand that you sometimes, not always, but sometimes need to just really look at your goals and say, wait a minute, is this what I want? Or is this what someone else told me that I had to do or should do? If you're going after something that someone told you you should do, it's going to be very, very easy to sabotage yourself and very hard to allow yourself to succeed.
I just sort of checked. Your books are long, hundreds of pages, 320 pages, 280 pages. All of the Amazon data tells us that no one's reading anything after page 99 anymore. Have you heard that data point?
Oh, absolutely. And look, Done With Head Trash is a digital program. It's not a book. So when you go to donewithheadtrash.com, it's videos and it's checklists, it's PDFs. It's literally fill in the blank for that specific reason, Jim. You're absolutely right. People, you know, aren't reading as much as they used to. And guess what? Everybody watches videos. So that's why, you know, and you can, when you just go to my main website, which is my name, noahstjohn.com, you'll see we have tons of video training, right? For that very reason. Hey, I still have books for people that like to read like me. I mean, I'm a voracious reader. I enjoy reading. But hey, most people are busy. So you can consume videos and checklists and PDFs and action guides. So I made it very, very easily digestible at donewithheadtrash.com.
But then why write the book that's 300 pages if it's...
I wrote the book first. I wrote the book in 2019.
Yeah, Jack Canfield is all of his books now are what one chapter would have been. You know,
right. Exactly.
I don't like that. I think it's a horrible trend, but...
Yeah.
We have to...
Well, I mean, like I said, I wrote... Us. You're right. I wrote Power Habits in 2019. It came out from Nightingale Conant. So really almost all of my newer works are video, you know, they're video online courses like Power Habits Academy and Seven Figure Machine. All that's at noahstjohn.com. But yeah, it's, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, look, we have to adjust. I mean, right now I'm doing a program called Get AI Visible because I'm working with local business owners who want to become visible on AI because SEO doesn't work anymore. The old SEO that we've all spent 20 years trying to master, that just got thrown out the window in the last 6 months. So we have, you know, a program called AI, Get AI Visible, and we're doing a done-for-you service to help local business owners get visible on the AI search, you know, the AI assistants like ChatGPT, Perplexity, Gemini, and so on.
Tell me more about that. How do you get someone more visible on ChatGPT?
Well, ChatGPT and all the AI assistants, what they do is they scour the internet. So they're looking for a domain authority and they're looking for citations on places like Reddit and YouTube and LinkedIn and so on. And so what we do is we create those types of authority blog posts and articles that then you can post, you know, on your own site, but you can also post on Medium and Reddit and so on. So we give that to you. We make those, we create those articles that the AI assistants love. So if you go to AIvisible.me, you can actually get your own AI Visible scorecard right now. It's free. So AIvisible.me, and you can literally see, you get a scorecard of how you are visible or invisible to the AI assistants. I mean, so this is, you know, we're talking about new trends and new things like that. So that's one of the reasons that I started that, because I kept hearing from my clients, hey, Noah, what's going on with SEO? And I'm like, yeah, it's basically out the window. So, you know, now it's GEO, which is, you know, the you know, for the AI assistants. So anyway, AIvisible.me, you can get your free scorecard, and it's really powerful.
You know, that's the exact same thing they told us to do, though, for SEO. You know, articles, mm-hmm. articles, links to the articles. You know, it's not really that different, is it?
The idea is similar, certainly. So I'm not saying that SEO is dead. I'm just saying that it has moved. It has migrated. There's a specific way that the AI assistants like to, when they scour the internet, when they're crawling the internet, they are looking for specific domain authority sites. Like I said, like Wikipedia, Reddit, LinkedIn, and so on. So we're giving you the types of articles that the AI assistants like. Now, you know, you could do it yourself. I mean, you know, anybody can sit there and write it. The point is most business owners are too busy to do it. So that's why we created this done for you service, just frankly, because of time, you know, because as a business owner, you know, you're busy running your business. It's hard to sit there and write these kind of articles that the AI assistants like.
Do the AI write the articles as well?
Well, yeah, of course we use AI, but we have human writers. So it's not like it's all automated. That's, you know, why it's a done for you service. It's very high tech, high touch. So we're using humans. We have, you know, I have a human team, but of course we use AI to help us create those articles because of course you want to make sure that every article or, you know, that whether it's on Reddit or your own website or LinkedIn or whatever, you need to make sure it's well researched. That's what the AI assistants are really looking for. And again, you're right. I mean, Google has said the same thing, but now for 20 years, we've been fighting for the top position in Google. But the point is you can get the number one position in Google and still get zero clicks because that's not how search works anymore. People are using the AI assistants like ChatGPT and they're doing much more research across all these different platforms. So Google isn't going anywhere. It's, you know, it's still there, but you can be number one in Google and still get zero clicks.
I don't know. Google may disappear. This may be what kills Google.
Hello. There you go. You're proving my point. It's still there. I don't think they're going anywhere, but it's moved vastly. And literally, they moved the goalposts just in the last 6 months, and you know they didn't tell us. It's like, wait a minute. So anyway, it's really totally changed in an incredibly short amount of time because of AI. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Google could actually disappear.
Well, you do think that. I don't agree. I think they're fine, but they have everything is, the whole landscape has fundamentally shifted. No question.
Yes. All right. So we only have about a minute left, Noah.
Yes.
What do you want to hit in 1 minute? All right, I have a question first. How long does it take you to write a book? So you've got 25 books out.
Yes.
What is the production cycle? Walk us through ideation through press.
Absolutely. I write the framework first. I write, that's like kind of like building a body. I create the skeleton. So I write the outline and then I just fill in the meat, you know? So I'm not one of those writers that starts writing without knowing where the end is. I know the beginning, the middle, and the end. And if you read my books, you'll see they do follow a certain pattern and a certain template. And that's one of the reasons why we also have actually a book done for you service, because so many people kept asking me, how'd you write all these books and can you help me write my book? So I'm like, yeah, sure. So I have a book done for you service too. But anyway, that's how I do it. And it really only takes me about 90 days from beginning to end and I'm done. So I'm able to do a lot of research and do a little writing in a very short amount of time and also do the same thing for our clients with the book done for you service.
And do you just sit down and type at the computer? Is that what you consider writing?
I do type. A lot of people do the voice thing. I know my friend Gary Vee does that. He's famous for just talking. And I'm like, I tried that. And I believe it or not, I can type faster than I can talk. And I enjoy the process of writing, you know, that for me helps me to think better. And that's how I do it.
Wow, type faster than you can talk. You talk fast, too.
I know, right? Well, I'm a fast typist, and that's just, hey, you know, 20, 50, whatever years of practice. Yeah, a lot of years.
A minute or something.
Yeah, it's pretty fast. It's pretty fast. I tried the speaking, and I was like, dude, you're too slow. Come on, let's go. We're good.
Wow. What do you think is the overall impact of the AI? Are we going to lose jobs or gain jobs? Or what does AI end up doing to us 5 years from now?
It has changed everything. Now, I was here at the beginning of the internet revolution back in the 90s. I've been online since 1995. I first got online. I launched my first website in 1997. So I've been here since the very, very beginning. And I got the gray hairs to prove it. But, so I saw the internet revolution and now seeing the AI revolution, it's at least 10 times faster. And so Sam Altman, I'm sure, you know, who's the head of OpenAI, which is ChatGPT, has said that AI will create more millionaires in the next 5 years than the internet did in 20. I think that's totally true. So it has transformed everything. Yeah, a lot of people are scared. A lot of people are losing jobs and will continue. Will it create as many new jobs as it has decimated? I don't know about that. So I really, I'm here to, my part of my mission is to help people. And so they're not scared so that you have those skills that are going to go through this AI revolution so that you can make money. There will always have to be a human touch. you know, a chiropractor, a dentist. I don't see how we're going to have robots, you know, adjusting people or taking care of people's teeth. I don't see how that's going to happen. So there will always be a need for human touch. And, you know, well, my job is to help people to do that and stay strong and not just survive, but thrive in this new, you know, this new world, this new landscape.
My latest book has the list of the 10 biggest environmental hypocrites on Earth. And while I was researching that and finding out who these hypocrites were, I was also, maybe I saw a James Bond movie or something, but I've really been thinking about who is the James Bond villain that actually is a real, like really out there now. And I think Sam Altman is very high on the list of James Bond villains.
Interesting. Wow. I had not heard that.
Him. I don't know if it was Tucker Carlson. Maybe it was Tucker Carlson. It was Tucker, about the guy who got killed. One of the AI guys ended up dead.
And, oh, dear.
And they ruled it a suicide. And, you know, it's, you know, one of those things where just in a billion years couldn't have been suicide. He got shot four times in the back of the head. You know, it's not a suicide.
Yeah, that's not, no.
Yeah, so, Tucker was going to Sam, you know, aren't you interested in how your one of your best friends got killed? And I Sam Altman is very high on my list of true, you know, they're all building layers now, these secret underground things.
Oh, God, yeah.
Shelters. And,
oh,
it's
God,
just
yes.
Too James Bondy for one of them to not be doing something. And certainly Elon's on the list, too, because he has his own rockets, you know, and
that's right.
There's like three James Bond movies dealing with the guys who have their own rockets, you know, so. I just think we have real James Bond villains out there right now.
Well, I don't think you're wrong. Zuckerberg has 300 acres in Hawaii, so he's got his lair all set up with a nice ocean moat there. So that's pretty smart. But you know, I'm really here for the rest of us. Those billionaires, I really don't care about. My job is to help, you know, the everyday hardworking, you know, person, entrepreneur, solopreneur, to really have that freedom lifestyle. And it is possible. It really is. And look, my team and I, we built something called the NoahBot, which is, we took my 25 books and my 40 years of experience helping people make billions of dollars, and we put it into a bot. And so, you know, you can actually get that just like a ChatGPT, but it's really specifically aimed at helping you to be more successful in your health, your wealth, and your relationships. So that's also on the website at noahstjohn.com. This, you know, the NoahBot is right there to help you. So it's like getting coaching with me for pennies on the dollar.
Noah, thanks for being with us again. Great conversation. And we'd love to have you back for book number 26.
Anytime, my man, anytime.
And we'll be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one. You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question.
And that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. You know, as we get older, our bodies start to change and we start to get pains and everything. Maybe that's inflammation. I know it is for me. We have someone who's going to help us. Please welcome Dr. Andrew Freeman to the show. He is the Director of Cardiovascular Prevention and Wellness at the National Jewish Health. Dr. Freeman, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Tell us about this. It's not cholesterol. What's the cause of inflammation?
You know, inflammation is an important thing in the human body, right? So if you get sick or you get cut or hurt, having inflammation in the short term is a good thing. But it's the chronic low-grade inflammation that comes with the American lifestyle that really increases risk. And in fact, inflammation can outpredict cholesterol when it comes to predicting who will have a heart attack or a cardiovascular event. And so this chronic low-grade inflammation is really important to not only measure, but also to treat. And I'm happy to go into more details about both of those.
Oh, yeah, please do. How do you measure it? What test?
You know, people are often surprised, right? They go to their doctor and they get their cholesterol panel, but you can also have a very easy test called a high sensitivity C-reactive protein measured. In fact, I measure it every time I measure a lipid panel in my patients, but a lot of people don't get it. And it actually is important because it can help guide just how intense we are with preventative therapies. Now, in addition to an amazing lifestyle, and we can jump into what that looks like, there are some great medications that are out now, and they've been around for a long time. One of them is called colchicine, and now we have an FDA-approved low-dose version of it. And it's been around since ancient Egypt, believe it or not, derived from crocus flowers. But it turns out that low-dose colchicine can lower cardiovascular risk by about 31% on top of things like statins, which many people take every day.
All right, that is impressive. Okay, and the inflammation, what about the best way to get rid of it, just with medicine or non-medicine ways? Is there things I can do? Is stretching going to help?
Stretching probably won't help so much, but there are a number of things that we can do every day. So besides not smoking, I recommend five things every day that lower inflammation and reduce the likelihood of heart attacks and strokes and even things like cancer. The first is exercise, 30 minutes a day of breathless physical activity. Obviously, check with your doctor first. Second is diet. And this is where a lot of people struggle, but the standard American diet is just bad news when it comes to health. So we want to switch to a predominantly low-fat, whole food, plant-based diet, which is hard to do, but very worthwhile to do. Third is stress. Life is stressful, so spend some time every day, 30 minutes, do some yoga, meditation, prayer, whatever it takes, and try to get rid of some of that stress. Fourth is sleeping enough. We want to aim to get 30 minutes, we want to get to 7 to 9 hours of uninterrupted sleep every single night in an effort to reduce the risk for heart disease. And then lastly, and fifth, is support. It turns out that people with the most love and support in their lives have the best heart outcomes. So we always want to strengthen relationships with people that matter and get rid of those that aren't so good. And if you can get all five of those things and not smoke, this is where we can really lower inflammation and the risk for a heart attack or a stroke.
Now, is inflammation related to a heart attack? Or is the cholesterol related to a heart attack?
So when we look at coronary heart disease, there are three major categories. One is cholesterol, the other is inflammation, the other is blood clotting factors. And if we can control all three of those, we can lower our risk very significantly. And the lifestyle things I just gave out, plus drugs like statins and low-dose colchicine, can really reduce all of those categories. And then when it comes to blood clotting, your doctor may or may not recommend an aspirin or a drug like clopidogrel or Plavix.
All right. Is the inflammation... obviously, you gave us these five things that we're doing. We need to have diet and stress and sleep and all that. If I'm doing one of those wrong, say I'm not sleeping and I have a bad diet, is that what causes the inflammation? Or what's the actual root cause of the inflammation? Getting old?
Yeah. The root cause of inflammation is, in most cases, poor lifestyle. So when we eat ultra-processed foods or the standard American diet, it's loaded with all sorts of chemicals and additives and preservatives and colorings and weird things that we should probably never be consuming. That's a big component of it. But it also turns out that being overweight or obese, as an example, can do significant things to raise inflammation and create all sorts of risks for heart disease and cancer.
All right. Where do most people feel the inflammation? Is it in the joints? Is that where most people feel it?
Actually, surprisingly, most people don't feel it at all. That's why we measure it with a blood test. Now, many people are surprised to learn that, you know, things like arthritis or anything that ends in itis is an inflammation. And many times they are acute in that they happen in the short term. But what we're looking at is low-grade, long-term exposure to inflammation, which is what we're trying to avoid.
All right. I've never heard that anything that ends in an itis is inflammation. Is that really true?
Right. So you've probably heard of things like, so arthritis, colitis, pancreatitis, they all are saying that whatever the organ is inflamed.
All right. Does that tie into the stomach diseases like IBD and things like that?
Right. Any of the chronic health conditions that people suffer from, inflammatory bowel or irritable bowel, all the other things, they're all inflammatory conditions. Inflammation is really the root cause of virtually every single disease.
Okay. Wow. I'm kind of taken back now. I'm sitting here assessing my own situation and thinking about all of the pains I have as an older guy. All right. So switching our diet the number one thing we need to do?
I think it's probably all of the things. We just need to live the way that human beings were intended to live, which is not what we're doing most of the time, right? When we're sitting around eating packaged foods all day, stressed out to the max, not sleeping enough, and never connecting with our friends and neighbors, that's not the way we were intended to be. And if we can switch all those things, we can live the most anti-inflammatory lifestyle possible. This makes a lot of disease go away.
And you said with diet that it's difficult to switch in today's world. Is that just because everything is processed?
Well, it's difficult, but it's not difficult. It's easier than ever now to eat plant-based. And one of the easiest ways is to go out for ethnic food. And it doesn't matter what you choose, Thai, Vietnamese, Chinese, Ethiopian, Mexican, whatever your favorite is, go out there and tell them you got a crazy cardiologist that wants you to eat just plants. And they almost always can make you something unbelievably delicious that you've never had before.
Okay. I'll take that challenge, except I'm going to eliminate some of the nationalities off that. I've already tried some of them. And then what about our heart? How do we know if our heart is healthy? Is it just the cholesterol score that matters for the heart?
Really, no. Cholesterol is just one part of it, right? There are lots of different things we can do to assess heart health. And depending on your situation, your doctor may recommend some imaging, things like ultrasounds or echocardiograms or CT angiograms or other tests or stress tests, other things like that. And then we usually measure cholesterol and C-reactive protein, high-sensitivity C-reactive protein for inflammation. We usually look at blood pressure. We look at weight. We look at your blood sugars. There's so many things we can do now to reduce risk. And the nice thing is the commonality is if we can live well, inflammation goes away. And when we need some help, we have drugs like low-dose colchicine and a variety of others that can really step in to help push it even lower.
All right. Great information. Dr. Freeman, how do we find out more, follow you, get more information about what we've learned today?
Yeah, there's a lovely website out there called cvdinflammation.com. That's C as in cat, V as in Victor, D as in dog, inflammation.com. And then for those people looking to make lifestyle changes, look into the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, which has a treasure trove of resources available.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us, and Godspeed to you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. All we hear about is AI, artificial intelligence, is taking over the world. Or is it? Let's find out with some real data. Please welcome to the show Marinella Profi. She is the global AI strategy lead at SAS. They have just done some surveys with about 3,000 people to find out how AI is being integrated. Marinella, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Jim. Doing great. Thank you for inviting me. I'm super excited to be here and to share more about the study with the listeners today.
So tell us about the data. What did it show?
Well, a lot of great things, but the top findings, I would say, I would like to start with the first one. And one of the main findings that we proved with the survey is that we're moving into an era where people are starting to trust the generative AI systems more than traditional machine learning systems, right? Algorithms that are proven, algorithms that are explainable and mathematically tested and validated. But there's still, people are trusting generative AI 200% more. So it looks like from the study, generative AI tools like ChatGPT, Gemini, they're winning the trust game. And what's even more fascinating to me, Jim, is that that is not because it's more accurate, but because it feels more human, right? The system talks like us, they listen, they remember. So it looks like trust in tech used to be about precision, and today maybe it's becoming about like presence. I would say that's a main finding, right? So trusting systems that hallucinate more, that actually are not more accurate just because they feel more like us. They're always there. They're validating. They're always responding. And that was pretty fascinating, right? But then also the study proved that actually even if organizations trust AI, they're seeing that they're trusting it, they're actually not investing in building, making their AI systems demonstrably trustworthy. So there is this gap, right, between AI optimism and AI responsibility, and that is where the reputation gets lost. So organizations want the benefit of AI, but they skip the hard work of ensuring fairness, ensuring explainability and control. And what the study showed is that these shortcuts doesn't just, you know, might save time now, but it's going to cost money after, because the study proved that leaders who are actually investing in ethical safeguards, they are 1.6% more likely to report higher expected ROI from their AI projects. So that was pretty fascinating.
Yes, that's a lot of data that you just shared with us. Great job. So people actually see a difference between AI and generative AI? I'd be surprised that people actually know that there's a difference there. Do people actually see a difference?
Well, they do, right? According to the data of this study, people don't only see a difference, but they trust the different systems, AI systems, more. And what we're finding out is that it's probably in the user experience, right? ChatGPT or Gemini is something you can just, everybody can just open from their laptop, their smartphone, and they can just ask questions versus more traditional machine learning that we have been, organizations, IT, and business leaders have been using for decades and are mathematically proven. Those are not easily or freely accessible by anyone, right? By the mass. And so that lack of accessibility, that different user experience is impacting the trust that people are having in this system. Even though generative AI is less accurate because it hallucinates, we as humans are trusting it more than other AI systems that we've been using for years, but are not just as visible and accessible as generative AI.
All right, that makes sense. What have, you've been mentioning the ethical guardrails. As a small business owner, people, they start using ChatGPT, for example, and they're using it and they're using it. How do they know what ethical guardrails to put in? I'm just a little entrepreneur with my 5-person business. What am I worried about ethically, and how do I establish guardrails?
Well, guardrails are something that every business benefits, not just, you know, big organizations, but also small organizations and small and medium businesses. What, you know, things like fairness, things like bias, things like, you know, you want to make sure that whatever you are deploying and implementing with as an, you know, whatever AI system that you are deploying or implementing, and you are allowing to make some sort of prediction or some sort of decision on your business, you want to make sure that there is not a category of humans that is being impacted. So we are seeing AI making mistakes on many, you know, headlines over the past years, and with regards to gender, with regards to, you know, religion, with regards to many different, you know, characteristics of human beings and categories. And so small and medium businesses want and need to avoid that. And so starting with the questions on who will this AI system that I am building or implementing impact? Who can benefit from it? Who can be harmed from it in case of a wrong decision? So all these are things that are questions that drive the ethical safeguards that businesses then, you know, decide to build in within their solution. At SAS, we're big believers in this type of trustworthy innovation. And the way that we are helping our clients and organizations, both big organizations and small and medium businesses as well, is through our data ethics practice, right? We have a six-pillar approach to data ethics and AI governance frameworks that help business, small and medium businesses to get started with the world of trustworthy AI and what are those ethical guardrails that are specific to their business and their industry, because obviously it differs use case by use case.
How do I know if AI or ChatGPT is lying to me? How do I know that the data is valid? For example, I ask a question and we're going back and forth, and that just doesn't seem right to me. I just don't trust that last data point. How do I validate or prove whether the conversation and the data is good or not?
Well, the truth is, we usually can't. And that is the nature of this technology, right? Generative AI doesn't intend to lie because it doesn't have motive. The technical term is that it hallucinates, meaning that it can generate information that sounds perfectly confident, but isn't grounded in fact. And that confidence is what makes it so convincing, and thus the higher trust that humans are putting into the systems, right? So the best way to catch it is to treat generative AI, I would say, like a very smart intern, like brilliant, fast, and creative, but not always accurate. So you always need to check its sources, verify the data, and most importantly, I would say, apply the human judgment. So that's why things like trustworthy AI design is so critical, right? System that cites sources, explain their reasoning, and have governance behind them to help you know when to believe what you're seeing or not. But the human judgment and critical thinking ultimately remain the most important skills that we have and should apply every time we use this system.
I love the analogy of the smart intern. That's a great analogy. But you know, interns, you have to watch really closely. You know, so I guess that applies to the GPT as well. You do have to pay really close attention. So for us small business owners, what is your advice as the first steps we need to take? We're afraid of AI. We keep hearing about it and people talking about it. We know we need to get involved, but what do we do as our first baby step?
Small businesses, I completely understand that fear, right? And it's not about being anti-AI. It's about not knowing where to start, as you said. So my advice is to start small, but start smart. So pick one process that is draining your time, whether that is writing emails or analyzing data or creating, marketing content, and experiment with an AI tool that can help you in that specific process. So you don't need to rebuild your business overnight. You just need one success story that you can sell internally to build that confidence. And most important thing is don't forget the human in the loop. So always start with human in the loop in mind. Use AI as a helper, not as a replacement, because the real magic, I always say, that it happens when your experience as a human meets the AI efficiency, right? So I would say, just to summarize, the first step is not technical, it's a mindset. Move from the fear to curiosity, test it, question it, learn from it. When you see value in one process, then you realize that AI is there to amplify you as a business owner, and you can start feeling more confident in using it and adopting it, and hopefully after at scale.
Great advice. Where do we find out more? Get a copy of the data. And thank you for SAS for producing the survey. How do we get to see it?
Absolutely. Please check it out, bookmark it, share it with your friends, SAS.com/AI impact. That is the URL. It's available today. You can just download it and share it and let us know your thoughts, your feedback, how you're finding it. Hope it's helpful. sas.com/AI impact.
Thank you so very much, and we'd love to have you back. Thanks a lot. Thank you, SAS.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, and I don't know if this is a moment for it, but I know you guys have a fun game in store. Let's do that.
Are you currently sober?
Oh, yes, I am. Okay. Mr. Jim,
do you want to change that? We just have to know.
Okay, let me take a sip of the bourbon that's just sitting right here.
Okay, good. Do you want to accept the standard wager?
The standard wager? I don't know about that.
It's standard.
It's okay, fine. Standard. I accept.
Number one, your favorite creativity hack.
Feeling sorry for myself.
Number two, favorite bootstrapping trick.
AI. It animates, it talks, it gives you a positive spin on a shitty situation, and it saves you money.
Number three, name your top passions.
Performing on stage, creating sci-fi worlds, correcting my children's grammatical errors, dancing at parties and bars when no one else is dancing, and weaving really big words like solipsism and pontificate into casual conversations, especially when I'm on a date, in order to test a man's SAT vocabulary.
Number four, the first steps in starting a business are?
Idea, plan, and guts.
Number five, the best way to get your first real customer is?
Make them laugh, give them food for thought, and give them what they need, even if they didn't know they needed it.
Number six, your dreamiest technology is?
AI boyfriend, who inspires me every day to be my best self, does all my house chores, and has zero needs of his own.
Number seven, best entrepreneurial advice?
Nobody cares about your movie.
Number eight, worst entrepreneurial mistake?
Thinking everyone wants a sci-fi woman-run galaxy and assuming everyone would know what Ontario World was and how it's spelled.
Number 10, favorite superhero?
Black Widow. I aspire to be a karate master. I was a gymnast and a ballerina in my youth, and there's still hope for me.
Anna, why don't we calculate the score and find out the winner of the wager? How do we get in touch with you, find out more? All of that, please. Watch your movie.
Okay. You can find me on movement360tv.com. You can watch my movie on galaxy360film.com and galaxy360.movie for an interactive educational experience. And you can also find me on social media. I'm Anna Fishbein on Instagram. I'm Anna Fishbein Official on Facebook, and I'm galaxy360movie on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok.
Fantastic. I'm just kind of pausing now until the, oh, I'm so sorry for you. You got a 94, which is an excellent score, but you have to have a 95 to win the wager. So you owe us a Tesla. We always play for a Tesla. Even one of those new cheap ones, we will take that. Apparently we have a judge named Anna who didn't like your comments about her being pedestrian or something. So anyway, that's what happened.
Oh, no.
Anna, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love
thank
to have you back.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much for this. You are an amazing interviewer, challenging, incredible, and also a super interesting human being. So thank you for creating the space for me to talk about my world. And I can't wait to promote and market this interview everywhere.
I appreciate all those nice things, and back at you. We are out of time for today. Back soon. Be safe, everyone. Take care. Bye now.